So you've all seen the title of my talk. I guess the real reason that everyone accepts this conference is probably that no one believes anything anyone else is doing in this field, as far as I can tell. everyone sort of wants to present their own viewpoint. I think what is clear is that the cosmological constant is a hard problem. And it was hard even before we saw that there's a little bit of non-zero vacuum energy. We just really have no idea why the cosmological constant is as small as it is. And the fact that it's not zero adds to the problem, but it's not like we had very good reasons why it was zero in the first place. So given that, and given that some people seem to be giving up at this point and saying it's the anthropic principle, it seems worthwhile to really ask the question, have we really explored all the alternatives? Are there new ways of thinking about this problem? And I think the answer is very likely to be yes, and certainly the approach I will present is a new approach. But I think we are learning new things, even if it's happening slowly. But people are thinking a lot more about gravity these days and recognizing that there are aspects that people had overlooked before. Even a thing as simple as what the cosmological constant problem really is changes when you have extra dimensions. For example, the fact that we have a large flat universe turns into fine-tuning a cosmological constant in the bulk against a cosmological constant on the brain. That, as an effective theory, it's of course the same problem why the cosmological constant is zero, but in terms of the fundamental dynamics, that is quite a different problem. And it could be that things like having extra dimensions or certainly more fundamental theories of gravity are going to introduce things that don't appear in conventional four-dimensional field theory. So there's a number of ways you can approach the cosmological constant, but I'm going to take the approach of asking, what kind of dynamics would we want if we were going to solve the cosmological constant? Can we even think of the thing we might be looking for? I'm not going to start from a fundamental theory and derive the consequences, because as we know, the consequences derived from all the fundamental theories that we know don't work. So I'd like to ask the question, what would be the dynamics that we would like to see happen if we're going to try to solve the cosmological constant problem? Now, the approach I'm going to present certainly can reduce the cosmological constant quite a bit. It's not going to be the final answer, but I do think it is an interesting alternative and worth considering. So this is work that I've done with Shinji Mokoyama. Okay. And of course, the talk is in PowerPoint because it's a cosmology talk. Okay. So since I'm the first talk, I can put up this transparency, or I guess it's not a transparency, but I can put up these equations. We all basically know what the cosmological constant problem is. The fact is that if you wait long enough, the cosmological constant is always going to dominate. And the question we have is, why is it that we had to wait this long for it to dominate? Why didn't it start to dominate quite a long time ago? And this dependence on the scale factor is actually going to be very relevant for what I'm going to talk about later, because we're going to have an approach where the cosmological constant goes to zero, but albeit very slowly. Okay, so I've mentioned this already, but I think really there's sort of two cosmological constant problems that we really have at this point. And I think really before we start asking about the late time cosmology, how the cosmological constant came to be the non-zero value that we see it is today, I think we really have to answer the question why it was so small in the first place. I mean, if we can't get to the point where we have the dynamics that produces this small cosmological constant problem, it's moot what it is that's producing it. So I think there has been sort of an idea that we can sort of disconnect the two problems. First, assume that someone's going to find a way to make it zero and then generate a small cosmological constant. But it seems very likely that that's not the way things are going to happen. I mean, we have this enormous cosmological constant, and this tiny little bit, and it seems that they should, at some rate, be connected. And it's easier to produce a small cosmological constant than it is to get rid of the big one. But nonetheless, that is the real problem we have to solve. So how could you solve it? Well, people have certainly thought hard about this problem, and basically, nothing works. I mean, one of the problems is that it's a problem you have to solve right away. You can't even wait for dynamics to settle down and get you to the place you want. If you start off with a large cosmological constant, you'll just never reach a universe that looks like ours. So you really have to answer that right away, what's going on. So previous approaches, of course, have tried to look for reasons that you might find the cosmological constant is zero at the minimum of a potential. And certainly that kind of approach has worked in other areas of particle physics, but it just doesn't work for the cosmological constant. There really is no reason, and it always amounts to some very strong fine-tuning in the end of the day. And of course, people have more recently begun to take more seriously the anthropic principle. And even if that turns out to be right, it does seem that there's nothing to be gained by just jumping into that. I think we want to look and see what are the other possibilities before we just say, well, it chose it. So I'm going to talk about an approach that I don't think anyone has actually done before, which is to look for some dynamical mechanism. So rather than say that the reason the cosmological constant is zero at the end of the day is that the true minimum really is at zero vacuum energy, I'm going to take an alternative approach and ask, could there be some sort of feedback mechanism so that when the cosmological constant goes to zero, the cosmological constant stops evolving? Now, saying a constant is evolving sounds funny, but what I'm imagining is that there is some scalar field controlling the dynamics. Now, in the end of the day, it might not be a single scalar field. This might be some conflation of lots of dynamics, but it's a model. And let's see if this idea works. So the model is going to be based on the idea that there's a scalar field, and that scalar field controls the value of the cosmological constant. And as the scalar field rolls down its potential, the cosmological constant will decrease. Now, of course, cosmological constant is defined in some sense by its time evolution, so we'll be more clear about what we mean by that later on. But the fact is the vacuum energy will be lowered as the scalar field rolls down. So, but the idea isn't that the field will have a minimum where it's zero energy. The idea is that when you get to zero curvature, this field is going to stop evolving, or zero or small curvature. So that's the basic idea. And it seems like a reasonable idea, given that we know it has to, basically we have to get rid of the cosmological constant right from the start. And the other things all are fine-tuned. Of course, one of the reasons people haven't done this, presumably, is because it requires unconventional dynamics. I'm not going to present a Lagrangian that anyone has derived from some fundamental theory. Although I do think that it's something that could be an effective theory, and I'll talk more about that. So it's certainly an alternative approach. Maybe it's what the cosmological constant is telling us, the fact that it's not going to zero, et cetera. But really, it's just another idea, and we'll see how well it works. So I hope you can see the pink curve. So the idea is that we just have some very generic-looking potential. The only assumption that I'm going to make is that the minimum is at negative energy, so that somehow the energy, the potential for the field is going to go from a positive to negative value, so it will go through zero. So if the minimum was at positive energy, this wouldn't work. But I'm going to assume there's a field, and it controls the energy, and it has a minimum that is negative. Okay. So we're going to assume that inflation's already occurred. And so now there's just some generic value of the cosmological constant, which could be quite large, that exists in the universe. And I'm going to, basically, we could expand any potential so that if there's a non-zero value, so that looks like a linear potential. So I'm just going to take this potential to be a linear potential plus the cosmological constant. And it's clear that this potential can absorb the cosmological constant. So the value of this potential is going to control the vacuum energy of the universe. So I'm sort of using cosmological constant and vacuum energy interchangeably now, which isn't really right. But I am talking about the vacuum energy. Okay. So like I said, we can shift phi to absorb the cosmological constant. Now clearly, if we choose the sine of c correctly, the field wants to roll down to zero. Now the key to the way our model works is that we're not using a special potential, okay? We're going to use a special form for the kinetic energy. So this is a very generic potential. It's not entirely generic, but it's a very general potential that we're assuming. And if we weren't assuming a general potential, then it wouldn't be stable under radiative corrections. But I'd like to have some kind of mechanism that actually is stable under radiative corrections. So we're going to use a non-canonical kinetic term to do that. So basically, as the field is going to roll, it has some negative minimum. So why would it stop when the curvature is zero? Well, you can think of two reasons this might happen. One is that basically there's some mechanism that ties the scaling of the vacuum energy to the kinetic and the potential terms. So there's some scaling solution where they both came down together. The alternative that you might think about is that the field really is dominating the energy of the universe, and there's a feedback mechanism that tells you that when the potential energy is some particular value, the field is going to stop rolling. The first one actually is nicer in some ways. The reason I think the first one would be nicer is that the cosmic coincidence problem has to do with why the cosmological constant is somewhere near where matter starts to dominate. Now, of course, it's much later, but you might think that if this was tied to when the radiation matter phase transition happened, that would be a nice feature. But we could not find a stable solution. I mean, we certainly found scaling solutions that work like this, but none of them were stable. So we're going to talk about ones where the energy is dominated by phi. So right from the beginning, I'm going to say what is bad about this. What's bad about it is that obviously there's a feedback mechanism that relies on the vacuum energy of phi. At late times, it's not going to work, because at late times, we know we have to be in a radiation-dominated universe. So you can imagine inflation ended. There's a cosmological constant that dominates the energy. So basically, what phi is going to do is phi is going to take this energy down to zero. But it clearly can't take it down to zero all the way to today, because there's a feedback mechanism that relies on knowing what's dominating the energy density. And the energy density at late times has to be dominated by radiation. So the feedback mechanism clearly can't work at the end. So that's going to be a separate problem that has to be solved. But it's certainly at early times, this is a way of getting rid of the huge cosmological constant that exists. So that's that's definitely one weak feature of this idea. So what did we actually assume? So we assumed that there is a singular term in the kinetic term, that is to say singular when the curvature goes to zero. So there's a kinetic energy term for this field phi, but that kinetic term has a denominator that actually depends on the curvature. So clearly this is stable under radiative corrections. Of course, it's also something that we generally don't see, but perhaps it's a result of integrating out extra fields, extra whatever. It's just an effective theory, and I want to see if this works. Of course, if we have a standard kinetic term in addition, which we generically would have, it won't matter. The most singular term is the one that's going to dominate the dynamics when the curvature goes to zero. So basically, I'm just going to talk about this particular kinetic term, but there could be other kinetic terms present, that is to say other derivative couplings. And like I said, it's stable under radiative corrections. I think I've said everything.
What is possible? I just have two questions. This is supposed to be, in principle, gotten as an effective field theory from something else. In what regime? And in what regime is this held for?
Well, okay, so it's... Okay, so the question is, why are you calling this an effective field theory when it's obviously not the effective field theory of anything? Paraphrased. So the point is that, in some sense, I'm saying that this is a summary of the dynamics. So it could be that it really isn't legitimate to have integrated out the fields that produce this dynamics. But instead of saying I'm going to write down 10 field equations, which when you evaluate, when you put it all together, give you some, for example, there could be a mass term that depended on the curvature for some light field. But clearly I shouldn't be integrating it out, because the mass of that field is of the same order of all the other energies. But what I'm saying is that the effective dynamics of this whole bunch of fields, I'm going to assume, could be reproduced by the equation of motion of this single field. So if there were any field, for example, that could be integrated out to give you these derivative couplings, that for a field whose only mass was R, for example, that could be something that gives you that. So it's not really an effective field theory in the true sense of the word, because there's no regime where this is really what's going on. But it could summarize the dynamics of a bunch of fields. Okay, so that's the sense in which I mean it. You said you had two questions. Was there another one?
I'm just wondering what the range of validity is.
Oh, okay.
Did you get K to some power in your paper?
We did, but you don't really need K to the first power is fine. We did that just to get it as an effective field theory, but I think that it's much simpler just to look at the standard kinetic term. There's no reason it had to be some funny power. But it could be. It could be other powers as long as the power is greater than a half for stability. Okay.
Small m is positive.
Say it again?
Small m is positive.
Small m is positive, yeah. Then we'll see it has to be bigger than 3/2. Okay. Any other questions at this point? Okay. Okay, so since we did assume this simple Lagrangian that summarizes things, it's actually simple to solve for the dynamics. Here pi is canonical momentum, it's phi dot over f. And you can write down the dynamics for pi, and it's all very simple because the potential is controlled by the energy that's stored in the potential for phi. So the Hubble parameter is related to that potential, and that potential is related to phi since we had a linear potential. So if you work out the time derivative of the potential, it's related to the time derivative of the field itself. And you can show that basically it is proportional to the Hubble parameter to some power, which of course you want to be positive, which puts a constraint on m. But the important point is that the time derivative of v is proportional to v to some power. So when v goes to zero, the field will stop rolling. Okay. So when h or v go to zero, the phi is going to stop. And that's the key to this. Obviously, if you had some generic dynamics, phi would just roll right down to negative energy and you'd be sunk. But here, phi stops rolling at when the energy gets small. And that's a pretty robust thing because you could have phase transitions, whatever, that happen afterwards, phi is still going to be basically frozen at late times.
Lisa, I'm a little bothered because the Lagrangian you wrote down has second derivative of the vector. Mm-hmm. So in solving, writing down this equation,
well,
it's the usual case, you either put in some special condition or...
Okay. I'm going to get to that later, but we actually checked that this is a stable solution. So I'm going to show that this what happened.
It's a stable solution, but it's not the most general solution.
Right, but the more general solutions are going to involve dynamics up at the Planck scale, right? Because it's.
We've built in a long question here, so maybe it's best if we all.
Oh, okay. Okay, why don't I go through this and then we'll come back to it? Okay. Okay. Okay, so this is basically what I was saying a moment ago, that as the potential goes to zero, the field stops. And this is basically what we were looking for. Now, why do I say it's almost what we want? Well, the reason is the potential energy has gone to zero, but unfortunately, so is everything else, because this takes a long time. The potential energy is going to zero slowly. So what do we do with that? Well, and I don't like this part, but the fact is all the energy has gone to zero of everything. So there has to be some sort of reheating mechanism that would happen at late time if this is going to work. Now, of course, reheat is a whole other assumption, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But the good thing about it is that there are conditions that you can give such that the reheat, the vacuum energy, is generically much, much lower. So we really have reduced considerably how finely tuned things have to be. I'll tell you in a minute. We're going to reheat simply means that we have to somehow thermally populate the universe. So, no. The idea is that we start off with very big energy, like m Planck to the fourth. So this field phi has rolled down and taken with it the background energy density. So the energy density really has gone to zero or some small value. And when it's gone into some small value, and it will have to be some small value for reasons I'm going to say in a minute, then something happens that gives rise to a thermally populated universe. So we just thought of two simple ideas. There probably are better ones, but basically it could be some late field decay, or it could be some colliding brain dynamics. So this is very phenomenological here, but we do have to deal with this. So the cosmological constant has gone to zero. And actually, I don't think there are very many models that even do that. So we actually have gotten the cosmological constant go to zero. But it's not ideal because it goes to zero too slowly. So we need some way to thermally populate the universe at late times. So we'd want some mechanism, of course, where the reheat temperature is reasonably low. We probably, just to get cosmology to work, you don't necessarily have to reheat to much above 10 MeV. So the best you might imagine doing is something like your 10 MeV to the fourth versus the cosmological constant today, which is more like 10 to the minus 3 EV to the fourth. So that isn't a total solution, but it's much better than M Planck to the fourth. And it at least gets you to the point where you can start thinking about late dynamics without worrying about the fact that there's this nagging M Planck to the fourth that just always is going to stop you before you get there. So basically, it just gets you to a starting point where you can talk about a low, reasonably low energy world and the dynamics of a low energy world. So, as I said, I'm not thrilled about this, but you can think of a couple of ways that you might go about it. One is that you have a light field. It could actually be even lighter than 10 to the minus 3 eV, but I'm just taking that as some random value. And what you might imagine is that there's also some coupling between this field chi, which is going to be responsible for thermally populating the universe, and the curvature, or phi, or the curvature. And so what's going to happen is when the curvature reaches some critical value, the mass squared of chi will change, and then you can then at that point, chi would roll down. So it's very similar to a hybrid inflation mechanism, except of course at much, much lower energy. So you can imagine that the dynamics, that the curvature itself also controlled the dynamics of some other field chi in such a way that there is that the field does actually change its value at that point, and then it will thermally populate the universe. Right. So in this particular case, the reheat temperature could be as high as a TeV, because generically the potential value at that point is going to be to get 10 to the minus 3 EV in the curvature, you're going to have a potential that's like TeV to the fourth. So what this, so if that these were the values, you would change the cosmological constant tuning from M Planck to the fourth to TeV to the fourth. So it's not perfect, but it's quite a considerable advantage. And of course, if you had an even lighter field, then it could be that the cosmological constant would be expected to be even lower. Okay. One thing that is nice about this mechanism, though, is that that phi will stop rolling. So you could worry about things have to be tuned so that phi is stopped, but it will stay stopped. Because, as I said, the change in the potential depends on the Hubble parameter, which is getting very small at late time. So this just mentions the fact that it actually is even better. So one of the problems, the reason we're left with this cosmological constant problem is that basically there's energy conservation, and so you have to have enough energy density around to get the temperature high enough. But if you had something like extra dimensions and you had, say, brain-brain collision, then it's actually possible to do it in such a way that you really robustly stay at low energy. Of course, then you have other problems. Why do we have a large flat universe? You'd have other cosmological issues to address. But the tuning problem would be very different. So that might actually be better in the end of the day. I thought I'd mention the fact that, if nothing else, this, if you don't like any of these reheat ideas, if we really did have a Lagrangian of this sort, it would be a very natural way to actually be able to sample all different values of the cosmological term. Because we have this field that's rolling down, if we imagine that this is now before inflation has ended, if you had some internal inflation, the amount phi rolls down controls the value of the cosmological term. So it's a very easy way to sample very different, all sorts of different cosmological constants. So but it's not necessarily time to talk about that yet. Okay. I just wanted to mention that the dynamics we have is not only bizarre, but it looks potentially very unstable because we have these higher derivative terms for gravity, and that is conceivably very worrisome. You would expect that you could get other solutions, but you might worry also about getting problems even with this solution at late time, because as the curvature goes to zero, that term looks like it gets more and more singular. The remarkable thing about the dynamics is that actually that's not true. It turns out that the derivative of the field is going to zero sufficiently quickly that the kinetic term as a whole is actually going to zero at late times. Now that's necessary, it's not sufficient, but that's the first thing you'd want to check, is that you're not screwing up the dynamics by having this singular looking term. And it very nicely goes to zero. Now, you do have to worry about the fact that you have higher derivative gravity. Now, people have thought a little bit about higher derivative gravity. I think it's always safe to say that there's going to be other solutions up at the Planck scale, but the question is, are you screwing things up down at low energies if you assume that you can neglect the higher dimension operators? Is that a safe assumption? And basically, the answer of whether that's a safe assumption or not is whether essentially the extra mode that you get because you have these higher derivative terms has a positive mass squared or a negative mass squared. So that's the condition that controls stability. So if we only had the kinetic term that I wrote down with the 1 over f, it actually wouldn't be stable. You actually need some other higher derivative terms that actually control things to make sure that mass squared is positive. So a simple term like r squared is fine. So basically, if you have an extra r squared term, then the fact that we have higher derivative gravity just doesn't matter. It's all fine for low energy. But that, of course, does give us a condition on m, because we have to make sure that the r squared dominates over the k over f, and that turns out to be m greater than 3/2 for stability. And you also need to check inhomogeneous perturbations in this particular case, again, because we have these weird higher derivative terms. And basically, you can show that there's a connection between metric perturbations and scalar perturbations, so that everything's safe. So I think that is, in and of itself, an interesting result, that we have this very singular-looking dynamics. Because you'd think that the Lagrangian at low energies is fixed. There can't be anything else. So when people talk about the cosmological constant, we're always stuck with the same Lagrangian low energy. And I think at least this shows that there could be things we're missing, because this dynamics, for example, is really very different for the scalar field, but it's completely stable and will reduce to standard Einstein equations. Everything is really fine at the end, despite the fact that this looks so singular and so bizarre. So I do think that's actually a very important result, and I don't know of many other examples where that's true. So I guess I'm finishing very early. But basically, I think solving the cosmological constant, it's a hard problem. So probably some of you are saying, oh, this can't possibly rewrite, whatever. But you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. And it's worth looking into what really are the possibilities. And I do think that sort of a dynamical approach is actually a very reasonable idea, given that it's really impossible to believe that we really do somehow end up with the vacuum energy being zero with a minimum of zero. I think we've investigated that enough that really doesn't look likely. And I think in that context, a dynamical mechanism just really seems quite reasonable, that there's some sort of feedback mechanism that tells you that the universe really wants to stop evolving when the curvature goes to zero. And of course, we could just give up, but I do think it's premature to do that. And basically, this dynamics is different, but we have seen things that are somewhat similar, for example, in supersymmetry Lagrangian, where we've integrated out fields. And it's not an effective theory, as I've said earlier, but it could be that the dynamics effectively acts as if there is this singular-looking term. And there's a couple of things that make that singular-looking term look pretty reasonable. It's local, it's stable under radiative corrections, and standard Einstein equations are recovered at low energy. So it really is a possible modification. At least phenomenologically, there's not a reason it's not possible. So it really is a legitimate alternative to look at. And what we saw is that it doesn't completely solve the cosmological constant, but can reduce it considerably. Ideally, it can reduce it from m Planck to the fourth to 10 MeV to the fourth. So that is quite a substantial improvement. And then it becomes a question, and at that point, we really can start asking the question, what is giving rise to the small cosmological constant we see today? What is the dynamics at low energy? But until we get to the point where we've gotten rid of this huge cosmological constant, it sort of doesn't make sense to address that question. So I've treated them as sort of two separate problems, and this is one way to deal with the big cosmological constant that would otherwise be dominating at early time. And then I think it's fair to say that if this were the correct mechanism, we really do need something else to work at late time. So I think it's possible. It's probably not the right answer, but it's certainly as likely as many of the other possibilities that have been presented.
It's very hard to hear in the back of the room comments and questions made in the front row, and so I'd like everybody to use the microphone. Now, looks like we have a lot of time for all the hands that are up, so Lisa, I'll let you decide what order you want to take people in.
Okay.
Oh, David was promised. David was promised.
I already asked him, but I'll ask him a second.
So the stalling that you get is when the Ricci scalar, the curvature scalar, vanishes. Mm-hmm. But if you succeed in finding a model where this is going to work, where there's a comparable amount of both vacuum energy and matter, mm-hmm. then the contribution to the Ricci scalar will come both from matter and from vacuum energy, and will the whole thing will equal zero when you get a small negative vacuum energy.
Right.
But then at that point, the universe is still expanding and the energy density in matter goes away, so you overshoot, right?
So I wasn't very careful about the way I presented that. Basically, as the curvature is going to zero, the field is slowing down. So the field is essentially frozen. So I said there is still a cosmological constant problem at the end. And the tuning you have to do will be basically it has to be that somehow the when the curvature reaches some value, right, the field is still going to roll if there's a phase transition because it won't stop at that point. So it has to be that it stops when the true Hubble parameter has gone to is still positive and non-zero. Okay, so it doesn't, the point is it can't control the dynamics at the end, basically for the reason that I said earlier, that it has to be the radiation that dominates. And so it doesn't work until the very end. It only works basically until this phase transition. But then it keeps it frozen at that point once the phase transition has happened, okay, afterwards. So the field is no longer rolling.
I'm still confused about one thing. In other modifications where one adds singular terms mm-hmm. to the potential, mm-hmm. Such as Dvalli and collaborators have worked on, it's clear there that you introduce, there are extra polarizations of the graviton that come in because of the higher derivative terms mm-hmm. that do affect gravity at astronomical distances.
Mm-hmm.
And are you sure that doesn't happen here? I mean, you have extra derivatives, you have extra gravitons, if you want. In this theory,
you see, basically, though we don't have. I mean, low scales in the problem, right? In their case, they really had two different scales that controlled controlled the curvature terms in the different dimensions. In our case, all we have are 1/n Planck terms. So basically, the alpha r squared is r squared over n Planck. So anything that occurs, so the dynamics will change at the scale root alpha, which is basically 1/n Planck. So any other solutions we have will just have to do with less than the Planck scale. So the only thing we had to check is that we have stability at late time, that this isn't making it unstable. Right? Suppose you didn't have this term, but all you had was r plus r squared. People have investigated that. And of course, there's a problem if you have a mass squared that's negative, but if you have a mass squared that's positive, all it's telling you is that up at the Planck scale, there could be different dynamics, but we know that.
Okay. It seems this would be most interesting if it could come out as an effective field theory. I wasn't quite sure whether you said it can't, or it just you haven't proposed a way that it could yet.
Okay. So again, I'm a little wary of saying effective field theory because it probably is just something summarizing the cumulative dynamics of several fields. Okay. And I agree that it's more interesting, but
that's effective field theory. Okay, well, I mean, in the context of effective field theory, it seems to me it would have to describe our universe, it would have to be an effective field theory at the curvature scale, at the 10 to the minus 3 EV scale. And the reason is that if you expand around the present value, presuming it's like this late time curvature controlled by the cosmological constant, you've written a Lagrangian that doesn't make sense at r equals zero, but it makes sense if you expand around this positive r, and it's this very small positive r that produces a very large kinetic term.
What do you mean it doesn't? My point was that actually, surprisingly, does actually make sense at r equals zero, that it actually gives consistent dynamics, right? But the thing is, it's not just it. The point of this, the thing I like about the mechanism, it's not just when the curvature is low. It's really working at all scales. There's always this feedback mechanism.
Okay. I didn't get to my question yet. Mm-hmm. And the term you wrote, I mean, doesn't singular at r equals zero, but you don't get to r equals zero. Your solution seems perfectly valid, and the way you're using the Lagrangian seems perfectly valid. But what I wanted to say is that then if you expand around a solution, you will get interaction terms between the new scalar field phi and the terms that come from expanding the curvature in that denominator, right?
Right.
And those will be controlled by the scale in the term that you've written, and that scale in the late time dynamics will be the scale set by the effective cosmological constant, what we see.
Okay.
And so it seems to me that that those interactions produce, become strong at that scale set by the effective cosmological constant because of higher derivative terms controlled by that scale, which is, again, not a problem in an effective field theory, but it tells you that the effective field theory should break down once you get to that energy scale and should come from, new dynamics at that scale.
Right. So I just want to just clarify a couple of things. Okay, so one is that, my point is that it wasn't necessary because we never get to r equals 0, but surprisingly, the dynamics actually is stable at r equals 0. I mean, that was the first point. The second point is that it clearly, something else has to kick in at late time, because this clearly isn't, it doesn't even work. I mean, independent of whether I can get this in effective theory, it doesn't work at late time. You really need something else in conjunction with it. It's enough to keep the cosmological constant small, but it's not enough to explain the cosmology of what's going on. And also that if it is an effective theory, it's kind of a funny one because it would have to be something like a mass controlled by the curvature. So of course, if that's fixed, then it's a fixed scale. But of course, as we know, the R is going down the whole time. So it's really funny to think of it in that.
Right. No, I wasn't granting that this scale was put in. I was saying that if we grant it, it works at the scales that we, relevant for the cosmological constant we see.
Okay.
Then it has to break down already by the 10 to the minus 3 eV level. If you want it to work at even, lower energies and longer scales, it had to break down even before that.
Okay.
I think I want to ask David's question again. It seems to me that in this mechanism, you've introduced a number of light particle degrees of freedom, and I'm not sure
it's just that they're
why decoupled. we shouldn't have the sort of problems that the Brandsticky theory has, namely that you're going to change astronomy and various other things because you won't be able to explain why these fields don't couple with gravitational strength to ordinary matter.
Are you saying that this inflaton couples to nothing else?
I believe it couples to nothing else.
But in the sense of an effective field theory, why would you say that?
Because it basically only, it has a kinetic term, but that's it, right? It doesn't.
But with gravitational strength, why aren't there couplings to all other fields?
But it's not gravitational couplings to all matter. It's gravitational couplings to gravity, right?
Why are you excluding them in the sense of effective field theory?
Well, because, that field is an effective field because we have this higher derivative term. So there was no reason to introduce the coupling in the first place. I mean, we could introduce higher derivative couplings to matter, but we didn't.
I have a question, sorry, in the back. I don't understand why this is, you are saying this mechanism is radiatively stable, but so that's what I don't understand, because you have this kinetic term of the scalar field, which is singular for r going to 0, right? So now if I close the loop by scalar field, I'll generate exactly the same singular term in the potential. So then the both will be singular. So and then
okay,
the
all I mean by radiative stable is that the form is preserved. It's not like models where you choose a very special form for the potential. It doesn't matter what the coefficient is. You just need to have a term that's as singular as the most singular term.
No, I think my question was different. So I have a singular kinetic term for the scalar field, right? But for this mechanism to work, you need that the scalar field becomes non-dynamical when the curvature goes to 0, okay? Right,
yeah.
So when cosmological constant vacuum energy is 0, you want scalar field to have infinite kinetic term.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I close one loop of the same scalar field, mm-hmm. I do generate exactly the same singularity in the potential. So this means...
In the gravitational action.
Exactly. I close the scalar field and I just generate exactly the same. Call this kinetic term f of r, right? So you will generate exactly the same f of r in the action. And now, so the scalar field will become non-dynamical only when your action blows up. But the gravitational one.
I don't think that's right, because this preserves some symmetries that wouldn't be preserved by that, right? There's a translation invariance. But if you close the loop of scalars, you just get, you get a singular term for gravity, but not for the scalar dynamics, right?
As long as primary is not, you're not going to work. You're only going to do the
So you're talking about a purely gravitational singular term.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. So that's a fair question. Basically, what I meant is I actually was only concentrating on the dynamics of the scalar. And basically, it's clear that there's something funny. I don't have a very good answer for it. I'm treating, aside from what I absolutely have to have, I'm treating the gravity as just coming, the gravitational equation of motion as just coming from this term. So I was worried about the radii of corrections to the scalar potential, which is safe. I don't have a great answer for that question. And one would have to really think harder about what's going on in the gravity, purely gravity sector.
I guess I have the microphone. I mean, it's certainly surprising, but I'd say not shocking, that in Robertson-Walker models and even in linearized perturbations, you get with this kind of action something like usual Einstein equation. But it would be a lot more surprising. I mean, the actual universe is extremely inhomogeneous with respect to the scalar curvature, which is varying typically 30 orders of magnitude all over the place, and presumably in these models would go through zero and so on. So I think it would be much more surprising if, when these inhomogeneities are taken into account, I mean, even in the solar system, this model would really give.
No, I think behavior. I think it is. Again, I think it's for the same. It's for, it's because, again, it's d mu d mu phi divided by this curvature to some power. And it's because the metric perturbations are connected to the matter perturbations just by the zero I Einstein equation. So so basically, there's a constraint equation that relates the two.
Perturbing off of a constant scalar curvature wouldn't be a problem. It's the fact that the scalar curvature isn't varying just a little bit off the constant value. It's typically varying 30 orders of magnitude off of the constant value. So, you know, if the scalar curvature didn't appear in the kinetic term, you probably should be able to do everything by linear perturbation theory, but I wouldn't think you could treat the actual universe as we observe it by linear perturbation theory, given this enormous variations of the scalar curvature that is not just a little perturbation off the Robertson-Walker value. Anyway, I'm just really suggesting that's something that should be looked at,
yeah,
probably.
Right, but I'm a little confused, because if I have these enormous variations in the scalar curvature, that actually makes the term better behave. It's when it goes to zero that's a problem.
Well, but the variations would also bring it through zero. I mean,
I don't think it would because the
average value would be negative of the scalar curvature in the present universe.
No, like I said, there has to be some other dynamic, so it has to stop before zero. So it has to be, if you had negative, then the universe would collapse and it wouldn't work. So it just has to stop at positive energy.
Okay. Well, observations indicate that the average value is negative, though. I mean, if we have an accelerating universe presently.
Thank you. I thought this is an audience of cosmologists, so I thought I've got to be wrong if there's not an uproar at this. But, you know.
So I just want to make a comment about this Brands-Dickey field problem. I don't think it's coming from the higher derivative terms. I think it's coming from the 1 over R to the power terms. You know, there was a model by Carroll et al. In which they introduced a 1 over R modification to gravity to get late time acceleration. And it was pointed out that this introduces scalar Brands-Dickey mode, which is strongly coupled.
There's so a potential, right?
I fear that the 1 over R type term in your model is going to lead to the same thing, bringing alive that Brandsticky scalar.
Okay. As I said, I'm not sure that's true because we don't have a direct coupling to matter, so I don't think that's going to be that problem.
But well, it doesn't matter. It acts like a...
Why you don't have couple this phi to everything, every other field in the world.
Right. So it's not an effective theory. It's not the most general term consistent with symmetries, whatever.
The theory has no problem if you fine-tune omega to be infinity.
Right. I see what you're saying.
The actual answer to your question, I think, is they can have R squared terms and so forth that give that scalar a large one.
Okay.
Each thing is a scalar that comes from the metric.
Okay.
So I think that
thanks.
I also have a question about your reheating mechanism. So you need some TeV to the fourth false vacuum energy to reheat at the very end. How come that wasn't part of the cosmological constant that got tuned to zero by
mechanism? It is part of it. I didn't go through that in detail, but it has to be. So it has to be. So the point is, this is sort of the answer to the question that was asked before, I guess Sean's question. So basically, the energy in phi has to be small and has to be dominated by the energy of chi at that point. So the curvature knows about the total energy density of the universe. So it has to be that chi is what's the chi potential is what's dominating things. So then that comes down. So that is the tuning. So it's really a tuning in the chi potential.
Well, just a related question. So I was wondering if you could try to do field redefinitions to make all your results more obvious, like stability and why you get Einstein's equation. So it's a bit related to what Sean did. You just, for instance, you could make your kinetic term canonical and maybe combine it with a conformal transformation.
I don't actually think it simplifies things, but you're welcome to try it.
No, but for instance, for instance, the Brandsticky story.
Yeah.
Whether the solar
system
test. It might
make some of the stability issues.
So here's how your coupling to matter will come up. Suppose you make kinetic term canonical. Mm-hmm. You've defined a new scalar field that now is a function of the Ricci scalar. Mm-hmm. Perform a conformal transformation, and then your new scalar field is actually non-minimally coupled to curvature mm-hmm. in this new frame. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see, you know, what kind of effective Brandsticky coupling it will have. So there might be a language that it's more easier to analyze what you want to do.
Okay.
My turn. I'd like to come back to something which a couple other speakers have raised, which is the radiative stability of this. You're not the only person to put inverse powers of curvature in the Lagrangian and to say it's radiatively stable. And this seems implausible because if you think about it as an effective field theory, R is the sum of a short distance piece and a long distance piece. And so even if it's singular when the total R is zero, after you integrate out the short distance piece, mm-hmm. it's a smooth function of the long distance piece. This is a general principle why the Lagrangians that we see in nature are smooth functions and not singular functions. Said another way, the cosmological constant problem is a problem that V equals zero is not a special value mm-hmm. because it's not stable against radiative corrections. And what I'm saying also R equals zero is not a stable value because it's not stable against radiative corrections.
So I think, so if, let me see if I understand what you're saying correctly. You're saying if I were to, you're saying, okay, so we're fine in the sense that you can get radiative corrections and that would correct the kinetic term to phi, but it doesn't matter, we still have the singular term. What you're saying is that if I were to get it by integrating out something, it would never just be by integrating out R, there would always be additional pieces.
It would be, instead of 1 over R, be like 1 over R squared plus M squared, where M is a big mass, and you smooth the singularity to some, yeah.
Right, and...
There may be exceptions to this principle, but I wanted to mention this because it's a very, one of the nice things about Wilson is he explains why the Lagrangians we see in nature, we write down polynomials, we write down things that have expansions in the fields and derivatives.
Yeah, as I said, I mean, we didn't actually get this as an effective field theory of anything. So you're worried about radiative corrections to the thing that it is the effective field theory of.
Yeah.
And it might be that this never comes out, but we first wanted to see if it doesn't even work. Yeah.
Well, you quoted an example where it comes up, but I don't know of an example where it comes up. You said supersymmetric model.
I'm just saying that you get... Okay, so you do get... It's not really a fair analogy, but in that case, you do get Lagrangians that, at least superficially, of course, you're really always expanding around some field values so that they make sense. But you get things like square roots, one over fields, whatever, if you write down the effective supersymmetric theories, they don't look like theories that we're familiar with. Of course, they get expanded around non-zero values, and then they make total sense. But they don't look that way naively. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, well, let's thank Lisa for what was obviously a very stimulating and controversial talk. That was great.